Welcome to Improv 409, the podcast that shines a spotlight on the improv community right here in Toledo, Ohio. Each episode, I'll sit down with local performers to talk about what makes improv exciting, terrifying, hilarious, and life-changing. You'll get behind-the-scenes stories, personal journeys, and maybe a few scenes and laughs along the way. If you've ever wondered what really happens on and off the stage, or if you've thought, improv sounds fun, but I could never, then you're in the right place. You'll get the Improv 411 here on Improv 419. I'm your host, Lindsay, and welcome. Today's guest is someone who makes improv feel easy to understand and fun to do. He was my level 2 teacher and now bingo rich teammate. Welcome to Josh Kaiden. Hi, Josh. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Lindsay. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm very excited to learn about your improv history, and especially you were my level 2 teacher. And you're like a professional teacher, correct?
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
So I was a teacher for many years, and now I train teachers and faculty, yeah.
So I'm really interested to hear about how that plays into creating like a level 2 curriculum for the nervous people that go from level 1 to level 2. But let's start with your start with improv. How did you learn about it? What drew you to it?
Well, so I had done theater and improv and that kind of stuff in high school, but then had definitely left it all behind. But I was in a PhD program at the University of Toledo, and I was studying, I was looking at teacher education, and the big problem in teacher education is how do you get people not to teach the way they were taught? They've been an audience member of teachers for so many years before they get into a teacher ed classroom. So what I was looking for is, what are things you can do with people to get them in a very positive mindset and get them in the moment so they're not thinking about what they think they're supposed to do or have to do or the right way to do it, but just are open to trying new things? And that led me, the research I did led me to improv, and I started working with the acting professor on campus and started talking with a couple of people on campus who actually did some improv, including one faculty member, Ashley Geiger. And she said, well, you probably should go do some improv. And actually, the acting teacher had me coaching an improv team on campus before I had ever taken an improv class.
Oh, wow.
Which is maybe not the right order to do things in. Definitely not. I think it was okay. But so I started taking classes at Glass City Improv. Jeremy Natter was my first teacher. It was awesome. And yeah, just on from there.
Was there a moment where you noticed that, so outside of wanting to use it as a tool to teach other teachers, was there a moment that you found where it connected to you, where you wanted to continue doing it outside of, like, career?
Oh, I mean, the minute I started doing it, it was super fun, and I wanted to keep doing it. And also, like, I, you know, again, doing things backward, I had read everything there was to read about improv before I ever took a class. So, you know, the minute I was in my first class, I was thinking, this is really fun, I want to keep doing this. But I was also thinking, like, I could teach this. Right? Because I know a lot about this, but also have a lot to learn. And it's kind of a nice combination.
Right? I would say, like, it works very well as a teacher. Is there a moment now that you are teaching it where, I'm trying to think of how to phrase it, because you actively do improv and because you are so good at teaching, where you notice the students in a different way? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, absolutely. When I think about students in any setting, I think pretty much anyone can learn pretty much anything, and yet all the time we're not learning, myself included, right? And so I'm always interested in what is it that gets in the way of learning? What are the kind of mental and emotional blocks? And so when I plan any kind of lesson, whether it's an improv lesson or I'm training a faculty member on how to grade better, right, then I'm thinking about how do I get around those blocks, either by pointing them out directly and kind of working with the person on them, or finding kind of clever ways around them, which we can do all the time in improv if we're trying to get people to be more in the moment. There are lots of games we can play that force you to be in the moment. The game Acronymble, where you have a three-letter acronym, and every time the coach or the host rings the bell, the next three words out of your mouth have to start with, say, CIA or FBI or whatever the acronym is. It forces you to stay in the moment of the scene because there's no other way to be. So that's a way around kind of the things that keep you from being in the moment. We can also address directly, like, what is it that keeps people from doing that? It's usually fear of, like, am I going to be okay if I let go of control, right? Which is so much a thing and is something I sort of my whole focus in level two is how do you get people not to be afraid to let go and be in the moment? Yeah.
Do you ever have a fear as a teacher? Because I understand fear as a performer, and I'm curious if, well, the teaching side.
Well, no, I mean, I think, you know, I don't know. So I think a lot of teachers, so when I'm working with faculty members at a university, I think they're very fearful as teachers because they're experts in their field, but they're not expert teachers. In fact, they know very little about teaching. And they typically, people who are experts in something, they don't like to feel or be put on the spot in areas where they're not experts. They don't like to feel like they don't have that control. Expertise is a method of having control over the world, right, in a way. So, I mean, that's what I deal with a lot. And, you know, with like I work with elementary teachers, too, and it's the same thing. Like, or I taught a class for Toledo Public School teachers, and we try to use improv to get more conversations happening in the classroom because people learn by talking. But teachers have a lot of power in the classroom, and they're afraid to give up power. But you have to, in order for people to learn well, and you have to give up power and control in order to improvise well. So to me, it's all kind of the same thing, that if we can collaborate, if we can work together, then the sky's the limit. But people are afraid to do that, right? They think they want to do it, but they don't really want to, right? Because if we're listening, which is what improv is all about doing, I would argue improv is actually the art of listening or the art of collaborating. We have to let go of our own ideas or what we're moving toward and be willing to change, or we're not really listening. So, yeah.
Did you find that improv changed the way that you started teaching yourself? Like in...
Oh, for sure. So when I run a training, when I work with teachers now, you know, first of all, when people take improv classes, they have to be having fun. They have to want to come back week after week. You're not grading them. They don't have to be there. So I definitely think of every class I teach as people should be enjoying it, right? And, you know, there's intellectual pleasures to learning too, but people don't often think of that as part of learning. But, yeah, so that's part of it. But then also just kind of the ways I've tried to work around fear in the improv classroom have helped me in other classrooms as well,
I'd say you are an exceptional level two teacher.
Oh, well, thank you.
Like, truly, from level one, it's absolutely terrifying. And then, but it's fun. Like, Jeremy Natter, the Katies, like, they make it very silly and fun. And then to move to your class, also very fun, but you help us understand the purpose of the tools that we've learned instead of it being like, oh, the kind of stepping in the shallow end. And then with your level two classes, it felt like an understanding of what improv is and what the purpose of it is. So I very much appreciate that.
Well, thank you. That's awesome. I appreciate hearing that too. And I would say, you know, so the difference I see between like level one and level two is level one is I'd call it feel good improv. Like people take it because they're curious. They don't know what it's going to be like. They want to have a good time. Maybe they're interested in getting on stage for the showcase. Maybe they're not even interested in doing that. They just want to see what it is. So it makes sense that you keep it light, you keep it fun, and keep it kind of moving. But when I get people in level two, what I say to them is my assumption is you want to be here because you want to get better. So now, you know, that's what we're going to do.
There's an investment in what improv is. And I've only ever heard what a great level two teacher you are. Like, it feels like such a specialty to have. Oh, I was very curious about what you notice about people coming in from level one, what the students, their reaction or how they feel about it.
Well, I think, you know, so the students come in, they don't know what to expect. They don't know what it's going to be. So I try to just set the expectations clearly. Like, you know, this is the difference between level one and level two. And I mean, you're going to get more feedback. But what I try to say at the beginning is I'm going to try to keep it really actionable. Like, it'll give you, I could have done this or I could try this next time. And it's not going to be, like, personal. It's not going to be, you know, there's a trust that it's not, because feedback is not about people being bad or doing something wrong. Feedback is saying, I trust that you can do even better, right? So I don't, you know, see it as like a negative thing, right, to give feedback. I see it as trusting, like, you want to get better, you can't get better, here are some ways to try to do it. But I want it to be positive, I want it to feel okay, and I want it to, you know, not feel like, I don't want them to feel bad ever. So if they do, I hope they'll let me know. And I think once I set that expectation and once we actually start doing it and they see, okay, this is how I'm, you know, coaching you while you're in a scene or while you're doing other stuff. Like there's really basic stuff that I always will catch when people are doing it on stage. Like if one person's standing behind another, that's basic stagecraft, right? But we don't always catch it. Like if my partner stands behind me, I have to turn and face backward to look at them. And that's a really easy fix. So why not just fix it quickly and move on? So I do, you know, coach during scenes, but also give feedback after. And I just try to make sure that they know that's what's going to happen so they don't, you know, feel bad when it happens. Yeah.
I think it is. It's a growth level two with you. And to go back to like a pool analogy, when level one is like a little baby pool and you're teaching them how to swim, basically.
That's the hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it really is successful the way that you do it. Yeah. Do you have a teacher that you remember any advice from?
I mean, so I've liked all my teachers, right? I've had Jeremy, I've had Katie, I've had Nick, I've had Diana and Aaron as teachers. And then I've gone to a million workshops at other places and I've liked all of them. Probably the advice that's been resonating with me the most lately was from a workshop this summer that you and I were both in, and I'm, what the heck is her name? I'm like,
Susie Barrett?
No, not no. Susie Barrett.
We'll get there.
Yeah. Doesn't matter. Anyway,
I know John Lear and then Susan Messing.
Susan Messing. Yes. Thank you. So, and it was the second workshop I've done with her, and I did some online stuff during COVID. But one of the things that she says that I've really taken to heart and been stressing with my students is sit in the fart. Right? And what she means by that is in real life, like if there's a fart in the room, you try to move away from it, right? You don't want to be uncomfortable. But in terms of improv, at least the way I take it is meaning that when something happens, it makes you uncomfortable. Whether you know, it's something that you don't feel great at and you're kind of, it's kind of demanded at you, an accent or object work or whatever it is you don't feel great at, or your scene partner uses a cultural reference or a word you don't know, then our impulse is to move away. But what we really need to do is lean in. So you use a word I don't know and I just am going to start using that word like crazy. Or you tell me I'm from New Zealand and I don't really know how to do a New Zealand accent, but dang it, I'm gonna make up a New Zealand accent. And I think that's brilliant advice. And I also think that I remember years ago reading somewhere like fear is a sign you should do something, but anxiety is a sign you should not do something. And I remember thinking to myself, well, great, if I could tell the difference between the two, I would be all set. But I think what I've started to realize this summer from that advice and moving forward is there are ways to tell which is which. And one of the ways is when you get in your head as an improviser, that's a sign that you're feeling fear. And that's a sign to sit in the fart, to lean into the thing that's making you afraid. Because the thing that makes you afraid, if you lean into it, that's courage, right? That's exactly what courage is. And so the two things are like flip sides of the same coin.
Have you found that sort of advice bleeding into real life?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, I have a fair bit of social anxiety and it's always something I grapple with. But I tried to kind of, you know, apply this sort of logic in my own life too, to sometimes a greater or lesser success. There are other things connected to improv that I think of in terms of that too, right? So there's an acting coach in England called Patsy Rodabaugh, I think is her name. And she writes about circles of attention and like when you're feeling turned inward, you're feeling self-conscious. You can't like be engaged with other people, right? Because you're too self-conscious because you got a stain on your shirt or something, right? Or when you're dealing with a group, that's the third circle. But what you're trying to do when you improvise is be in the second circle of attention where you're really engaged with someone else and you're not in your own head at all. You're really focused outward. And that's something we think about with acting a lot, but I think is a useful way to think about improv and also a useful way to think about where you're trying to get to when you're dealing with other human beings generally in life. But so where does the fear come in? Or that it comes when you're in that first circle, right? When something has happened that pushes you back into yourself, whether you're improvising and you're called upon to do an accent you don't know how to do, or you're out in the world and you get that stain on your shirt, right? So it's the same feeling inside of being back in your head, and it's the same sign I need to try to push past it. I think I'm a little more successful at improv pushing past it than in real life, but that's life.
Yeah, it's all progress. Right. It makes me like envision like a turtle or something. Like you're getting a little more comfortable and then, oh no, I got to go back in real quick. Which you can't be just a shell on the stage.
Yeah,
you have to be out of it. I would also say that you're one of the most encouraging people in this community. I don't think I'd be here doing this podcast. I wouldn't be on the team in here, say, like you took me to my first jam after like maybe 2 weeks in level two. And now there's tons of other students that just like yesterday were announced on a new team.
Yeah.
What encourages you to be so encouraging to all your students?
So I think there's a couple things. One is I think improv is just more about community than a lot of other things. I've done a lot of plays, and when you do a play, it's more like a job. You show up on the days you have to show up, and you do what you do in rehearsal, and then you kind of leave. And it's just less social, and I think for me, less fun for that reason. But at the same time, because I've always sort of had my own social anxieties and whatever, I feel like I very consciously try to build the community and invite people and make people feel welcome. So like we have the monthly show tonight, right, at Glass City Improv, and we've got them every month, and generally people go out to the attic afterward and hang out. And so I try to say to my students for at least a couple weeks before, you know, please come to the show, and also know that we want you to come to the bar, we want you to hang out, we want you to meet everyone, and just kind of make sure that everyone knows that they are welcome and they are invited personally, because that's something I'm about, you know, in my own life I've been anxious about. So I just try to make it super explicit to people and also just be encouraging to people, because it's exciting when people succeed. Like I was so thrilled, like, you know, I was bummed I didn't make that team up at Hearsay, but I was thrilled that the three of, you know, the people, former student, current students who I specifically had conversations with, and was like, you should audition, I'll audition, and they all got it. And that's like, wow, what an awesome feeling that is, you know?
Yeah, it's really lovely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If there's somebody that's listening that's new to improv, or maybe they've heard about it, they're interested in maybe trying, do you have any advice that you would give to them?
Yeah, I mean, I would say everything in this world is harder to think about than to do. And improv helps you really realize that. But even if you haven't done improv yet and you're considering trying it, just try it, right? I know walking through the door of Studio A or wherever you're taking classes for the first time is hard, but that's literally the hardest step. And once you've made that step, then it's just awesome. People are friendly. You'll make friends. You'll go out to the bar with them. You'll hang out outside of class. Every class, you'll just be laughing like crazy. And it's just so fun. And it'd be a shame not to try it, because that fear of that first step, which is absolutely real and which I feel too, it'd be a shame to let that stop you.
So. Well, how about we try a little improv now, Josh?
Absolutely.
Sounds good. Okay, Josh, so our suggestion was traveling.
Great.
Let's start traveling. Let's go somewhere.
Sweetie, the Grand Canyon's a lot bigger than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, and on the pictures online, it looked much smaller than this.
Yeah. I think, honestly, I probably would have preferred it smaller.
Yeah, I can't even see over there.
Right.
What's over there? We'd have to walk there?
Yeah. Oh, I don't want to do that.
No, we just...
Yeah. That's tiring. And is there a smaller canyon we could go to?
I mean, we passed a couple potholes on the drive here.
Oh.
Those are kind of canyons, ain't they?
I do like a good... I've never thought of it that way before, but how poetic and beautiful.
Ugh, yeah. Well, I have been taking my classes, you know.
Well, let's just... Yeah, what if we just retreat to this little pothole? There's one right there on the sidewalk. Look at that.
We should take a picture and send it to Barbara.
We should. Oh, us at the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, right. Careful.
Let's get in.
Yeah. Oh.
Oh, that's lovely. That's going to be my profile picture.
Oh, Christmas card. Could be our Christmas card this year. Us at the Grand Canyon.
That would be beautiful.
And I love the way the water shines in it, that little reflection of the sky.
That little oil spill that's putting the rainbow in.
Yeah.
Oh, this is so much better than that old thing over there.
This is the kind of nature I could really get behind.
Oh. You know what? I really think, we're doing good this time, babe.
I think we are. I was thinking, you know, Maybe we have Grand Canyons at home too. Or maybe we could put one in our driveway.
Oh my God, you would do that?
I would. I would. Could we charge admission? Put up little railings?
I think so. That could be. We retired last year, so.
Yeah, and you know, the retirement account's not what it was.
No, not these days. So yeah. That's our secondary, or well, I guess our first right. area income now.
The Grand Canyon in Newark.
The Great Canyon. What's better than Grand?
The Great Canyon in Newark. Yes, the ultimate canyon.
Oh, my God.
Yes, and then they have to rename the Grand Canyon the penultimate canyon because it's second best. Oh,
that's so funny. Yeah. I'm so glad we get to take our little trips like this.
I'm glad, too, but I also am starting to feel like we don't even need to leave home ever.
No, we got our tree in the backyard.
Right. Yeah.
We got our tree. We'll have a pothole.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, why would you ever need to go anywhere else? In fact, maybe we should just lock ourselves in.
I'm not opposed to it.
Yeah.
Barbara's got a key so she can come home from college when she's ready.
Oh, she's a sweetie. Yes. That Babs of ours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Little Babs.
But I think if we're going to lock the doors, I think probably they should be sealed.
Oh, okay.
You know, just as a principle, right? Once you lock something, I mean, once you open it up again, you're just opening yourself up to trouble.
I guess we could look from the window at our tree and get our little canyon.
I mean, or maybe the better idea is to fence it all in and lock the fence, right?
Are you not enjoying being out in the world anymore?
I mean, I just feel like every time, it's a letdown every time. The Grand Canyon, like, ooh, scary, a little too big, can't see across it, right? Like, and we went to the Redwoods, and I mean, what was your reaction there?
I screamed. I screamed and I ran away.
Yeah, like, who wants a tree you can't reach around? You know, that's just silly. Like, let's grow some tulips.
I'm a literal tree hugger, so like.
Right, and if you can't really hug it, it'd be like if your dad was a jolly green giant. What a disappointing hug that would be. Ugh,
another disappointing father. Jeez.
Yeah, oh, I'm sorry. No, I touched a nerve there.
No, it's okay.
It's okay. I'll
go home and hug the tree. It's okay.
Yeah. And of course, if we keep it in ourselves within that fenced off yard, we can still visit, you know, your actual father's grave.
Oh yeah,
right there in the back.
I'm so glad you let me do that.
Well, I figured once you do him in, it's sort of you can't use the traditional graveyard route, right? Can you? That wouldn't be right.
Well, you know, just it was out of convenience, truly. And there's a bird bath. So he loved his birds.
There is. And what I like is that every time you feel that anger or that rage of yours, you just go fill it up naturally the way you like to.
Yes. I really get to do everything I want to at home. Thanks, babe.
That's right. That's why I'm saying, why ever even bother leaving home?
And scene. Well, thank you so much for being here, Josh. It was really nice talking with you.
Thanks for having me.
A huge thank you to WGTE, Voices Around Us, and our producer, Chris Pfeiffer, for making this podcast possible. And of course, thank you to today's guests for sharing their stories and their love of improv. You can find Improv 419 at wgte.org/improv419 or any podcast streaming platform. And finally, thank you to you, the listeners, for tuning in and supporting. Please check out the other wonderful podcasts, part of the Voices Around Us series, and stay tuned for more Improv 419 episodes.
WGTE. Voices Around Us.